Let's talk to the professional at the heart of this, John McShane, who is the solicitor who represented the claimants who were successful in court. The PSNI are now facing a £40 million holiday bill, and that could go up if the figures are investigated further. John, morning to you.
Good morning.
Can we start at the beginning? So what is the legal precedent that you won here? What were you saying to the court?
Well, I clarify by saying it wasn't establishing a precedent. It was following where the law has been since 2014. And this case arose from case law that came through the European Court of Justice, which then finally came to clarify the position in relation to overtime. In 2014, I myself pursued a case that ultimately was heard in the Court of Appeal called Patterson against Castlereagh Borough Council. It dealt with the issue of voluntary overtime as to whether it should be included in the calculation of one's holiday pay entitlement. So I would say this is not new. It's not something that was a surprise to the legal community. This is a situation where the position going forwards has been as crystal clear as could be from 2014. I accept, and that's what the case was more about,
and that's
in
first,
relation to the arrears element.
And that first case, sorry, it was Patterson v Castlereagh Borough Council.
There was a number of cases in Europe dealing with issues like should commission be included within that calculation of overtime. And then I pursued a case called Patterson, which clarified the position in the Court of Appeal back in, I think, 2014.
And what was the judgment there? What did that establish?
That agreed. Effectively, the Court of Appeal also agreed that voluntary overtime should be included within the calculation. So it's a position, as I say, from 2014. The law has been clear. The dispute, which this case was more centred upon, was effectively how far you can go back. Our argument was that in the Employment Rights Order, where this legislation originates from, there is a position that is defined as serious. So our argument in this before the tribunal and before the Court of Appeal was, what is a serious? A case.
What do you mean serious? I don't understand what that means.
If you, for example, had holiday on the 1st of January and you weren't paid right, and then you weren't paid in April right, and you weren't paid for your 2 weeks that you take in summer, the argument is that despite the fact that there might be a break of 3 months or more between those periods that you took annual leave and weren't paid correctly, does that amount to a series? And under the legislation, if you can establish that it is a series, you go back to the start of the series. And that series, we say, starts in 1998, because that's the origin where the law comes from that gives rise to the series argument.
I am slightly slow in these type of things, right? I still don't understand what a series is. So a series is basically continuing employment, is it?
It's a degree of permanency and regularity. There's no definition per se, because it's hard to have an absolute black and white. A series for one person may be disagreed as amounting to a series by another. So the issue was, we were arguing in these circumstances, where my clients being officers and civilians, the issue was not being paid correctly to take account of overtime, irrespective of maybe them having breaks of longer than 3 months between those periods that they took holiday. Did that amount to a series? It is a matter of fact for each case to be determined. The court agreed in the tribunal and the Court of Appeal agreed that our argument was upheld, that it is a series.
And how did you argue it was a series? Like, what in terms of, for the police officers, for example?
Because of the amount of overtime that they do, and then establishing that the overtime is regular enough. So, for example, there's, as your listeners will well be aware, there's certain times of the year that overtime will substantially increase.
We're coming up to it in July, aren't we?
Potentially, yes. But it's a situation where, is that, for example, where there's a certain degree of potentially the regularity of those occasions when overtime would be required, does that amount to enough permanency and regularity to give effect to be a part of a series?
And that's what the court determined, that the answer was yes, it did.
Both the tribunal, in front of the vice president of the tribunals, and also in before our Court of Appeal, agreed that it is a series.
Now, I tried to do some reading about this last night and I got myself confused because in Great Britain, I thought I had read that the government essentially had put a cap on it where you could only go back 2 years. And I wondered how you were able to go back for these police officers 20 years. Am I getting things mixed up?
You're correct, Stephen, in that there was legislation surprisingly introduced within a matter of weeks following the decision in England. Sorry, in respect of the case law clarifying the position in 2014. I think was dealt with by Vince Cable and the coalition government, and it was introduced quite quickly. And I think your listeners would probably understand the rationale behind that being introduced. No such equivalent legislation was introduced in Northern Ireland.
They didn't implement it here?
No, but I would say that also there's been expressed within the decision in the tribunal some concern that I think the Vice President appreciated the fact he didn't have to deal with the lawfulness of that legislation being introduced in England, Wales, because it was only relevant to England, Wales, not Northern Ireland.
So that legislation that the government, and by the way, it is for others to decide, certainly not me, to decide whether it was morally right of the government to try to rush through legislation across the water, essentially to stop people getting holiday pay that they may have been due. Okay, mm-hmm. And to be fair to the government, they were trying presumably to protect some employers from going bankrupt that having to find all of that money, or at least that's what they would argue. But in Northern Ireland, we did have a government and they just didn't bother to even put that through?
No.
Which has left Northern Irish businesses, you could argue, either exposed, or Northern Ireland employees certainly do not have that cap that they do have in Great Britain, correct?
Correct. But again, the issue on the lawfulness of that legislation being introduced in England, Wales, was a matter that I think the Vice President appreciated he didn't have to deal with. Because remember, this is a fundamental issue of health and safety. It's a fundamental issue of employment, European rights. It goes to the heart of protecting people. The reason why it goes to the heart of protecting people is if you're working 9 to 5 and you're trying to do all the hours you can do in overtime, potentially to maintain mortgages, you know, maintain a certain, you know, paying for your family to go out and stuff and enjoy a weekend. The reason why this was looked at is it shouldn't be a deterrent that when you go on holiday, the pay that you have to rely upon to keep your standard of living depreciates or reduces during the period of time. So it goes to the fundamental situation of protecting workers at a fundamental level. And I wouldn't resign from the fact that my clients are perfectly entitled to pursue that equally.
Do you know if at the time, John, the Northern Ireland Executive discussed at all introducing this cap?
I have no knowledge as to that at all.
Well, there's a question for Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill or whoever it was at the time. When was that cap put in? 2 years ago?
And it was introduced
2014?
2014.
When we had an executive in Northern Ireland?
But it was England and Wales, not Northern Ireland.
So for those people who they've got a job, and let's say it's a 40-hour week, right? Let's take this down to just the basics. So they've got a 40-hour week. Let's say, for talk's sake, it's 9 to 5. But they often in their job claim overtime, and their holiday pay was not paying them for that overtime. Should they be at least going to their employer and asking if they're entitled?
I think the word that you've used is often, and that's a very subjective term. The issue in the case law is what degree of regularity there is in respect of that often. In our cases, it was very frequent. A degree of permanency was established in respect of the overtime that was required.
Define frequent.
That's the issue. There's no definition. Equally, there's no definition of series. It's a matter for the court to determine. I think that was one of the criticisms of by both the Vice President in the tribunals and the Court of Appeal. There's a lack of clarity about this area of the law that's resulted in a substantial amount of cases being pursued.
But what's your opinion as to what would define, to help our listeners, what's your opinion as to what would define frequent? If it was every month, would it need to be every week? Could it be?
But that's exactly the situation. There's a lack of clarity in the law because there's a lack of cases being pursued. I think there's a more sensible approach that employers recognise there's a potential vulnerability here. So there's a reason to potentially engage with their employees or potentially the unions that are representing those employees to say, look, we want to meet our legal obligations. There's no issue of dispute potentially going forwards. There's maybe a scenario where we'd like to come to some kind of compromise in respect to their arrears. But in this instance, there was no approach taken of reasonableness. It was essentially take your case and we'll see what the court determines.
And you can go back to what you've said to me this morning is you can go back to 1998.
You can go back to 1998 because that's the origin of the legislation that gives rise to the cause of action. It's in legislation that was introduced in 1998 that effectively is the origin of the ability to pursue a serious argument in relation to being paid your normal pay. The issue that there was a lack of clarity about is what's normal pay. Everybody, including me, would have thought 10 years ago, normal pay is what you get paid. It's your basic pay. Yes, you get maybe a bit of overtime and you'll have some allowances on top of that. But basic pay must be your normal pay. But then cases in the European Court of Justice determined, well, that's not correct. Your normal pay is, surprise, surprise, what you normally bring home. And that can include overtime. Cases were pursued on the basis of I have a very low basic pay and I get majority of my pay through commission. So when I go off on annual leave, I have real difficulties in going on annual leave because my pay drops so dramatically to my basic pay. But what the legislation says is that what you're entitled to be paid is your normal pay, and cases were pursued to clarify the understanding of what's meant by normal. Normal was initially commission. There was a surprise among the legal community in that. And then cases were pursued to establish, well, what about overtime? Because that has to be closer to pay than commission. And yes, that was upheld. Then I pursued the case that was successful in the Court of Appeal in Northern Ireland that dealt with the issue of what about voluntary overtime? That is overtime that you're not required to undertake by your employer, but you can simply say no to. That case was successful. But all these cases are going back to 2014. That's why I'm trying to explain that this case is not establishing a new precedent or something that employers were not aware of. Like, I act for a number of employers and I was advising them, get your house in order. Because if you don't get your house in order, there's a situation that when this does eventually get wider prominence, then you could have employees coming to you and saying, what about my arrears for the last 20 years?
And you mentioned there a moment ago that you may do some type of settlement for arrears. Why would you settle for arrears rather than fight for 20 years? Why would you do a settlement rather than get it all?
Because the issue is there's some, as I was explaining, and to use your word back to you, what's often, what's regular enough, what's permanent enough. There may be a debate in respect of the specific factual circumstances of that case. Equally, as was expressed by the Vice President within his tribunal decision, who wants to spend the next part of the next 10 years dealing with remedy hearings? There's a situation where there's a rationale to approach people and for common sense to resolve matters, a pragmatic approach. And if a pragmatic approach is put on the table, depending upon the reasonableness of that proposal, parties can get into an agreement.
What about some of our listeners this morning who may have left their job? Are they still entitled to put in a claim? So I'm hearing from, for example, I'm hearing from some former firefighters who said they regularly did overtime as part of the job. It was part of the gig. But they've left. They've retired.
The issue is that to lodge a case, one must lodge it within 3 months of the last unlawful deduction from wages occurring. That's the jurisdictional remit of the tribunal. So to lodge a case, I have to suffer or not being paid correctly for my overtime when I go on holiday within the preceding 3 months. If I'm outside that 3 month limit, then the tribunal doesn't have the jurisdiction to accept my case. I can't effectively, to use maybe a colloquialism, I can't go through the door to get access to their ears going back. And if you can't open the door, you're left outside.
And when you say lodge that case, is that lodge a complaint with your employer or is that lodge a case with the tribunal?
No, it's to lodge proceedings at the tribunal. You have to issue proceedings within 3 months of last incurring an unlawful deduction of wages. It is a requirement, but not, it's not an absolute requirement. I would encourage, if it's a scenario where you think there's an issue, to lodge a grievance. Because equally, if you don't pursue a grievance, then the tribunal can take that into consideration and any subsequent award, that effectively it can decide to potentially reduce that overall award because you failed to get you failed to use the internal grievance procedures.
Okay, so that's really important. So the because what will be happening here is people listening to this morning will be thinking, I'm entitled to this, what do I do? Essentially what you're saying is, if people do not think they've been paid overtime pay properly, they should first of all lodge a grievance with their employer.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's a situation where you think waiting would put you in a position where potentially you're outside the 3 month time limit. The first priority is the 3 month time limit. That's an absolute issue. You can provide an explanation to the tribunal why you didn't submit a grievance, and the tribunal can take that into consideration in respect of any determination.
Does this apply to agency workers? Does this apply to people who are on specific types of contracts?
Yes, it's a situation where the case is not against, for example, in relation to agency who you're deployed with. Your case is with your employer, because it's your employer that's paying you your wages. And if your wages don't include the overtime and allowances, then that's where your cause of action is against.
The reason we broke this part of the story this morning is the Northern Ireland Civil Service have essentially, it's the Department of Finance, they've essentially told us that they're now in discussions with the unions about this, and it hasn't been costed. You could be the man who has come close to bankrupting businesses in Northern Ireland.
My responsibility...
Hold off that sec. Hold off.
My responsibility is to act in the best interests of my client. If a client came to me and says, I've got a case, will you bring it? My legal and professional obligation is to act in the best interests of my client. That is where it stops for me.
What's your advice to employers?
My advice to employers is to do an audit. See exactly how much you've got in overtime and allowances and seek professional legal advice. Speak to somebody like me that can professionally advise you how to potentially mitigate your liability and quantum. But it's also to reflect upon the position, the law has been clear since 2014. You can't do anything about going forwards. That is the position going forwards. It's about a discussion and potentially a pragmatic discussion in respect of your employees or the unions who act for those employees in relation to that element of arrears.
One of our listeners just finally has suggested this morning that while this might be, what he said, a small win, employers will essentially start cutting the rate at which people are paid to allow for holiday pay costs, or they will try to skirt around this by making everybody on a longer week, so that holiday pay is not counted as overtime.
Your contractual terms cannot be varied without your agreement. And we keep coming back to a position where employers are surprised about the position and about the judgment on Monday. But as I've explained, I think in some depth, the position of the law has been clear, absolutely crystal clear, since 2014. And this is the fundamental issue of health and safety. It's a fundamental issue of employment and European law. You shouldn't, when you go off on annual leave, have to have cognizance that I can't afford my mortgage. I have to reflect whether I can go on annual leave because I can't afford it. I can't maintain my standard of living. That's why this was introduced, is to protect fundamental employment European rights.
John McShane, thank you very much indeed, sir. Thank you. Huge story this morning. You've just heard from the solicitor who was at the heart of this class action against the PSNI. Sorry, John, just one more question. I've delayed the news for this, so I do need to go or I'll be getting killed. I'll be getting sacked.
I'll act for you.
Okay, thank you. Is it possible that the Chief Constable will appeal this ruling, and might that therefore change this judgment?
Everything is possible. There can be an appeal, and he has to seek an application to the Court of Appeal to pursue that to the Supreme Court, or he could make a direct approach to the Supreme Court if that was rejected by a Court of Appeal. But I would then encourage a reflection upon the strength of both the Vice President's decision in the tribunal and the strength of the Court of Appeal's decision.
Okay. John McShane, thank you very much indeed. This is a huge story, huge implications for most of us who are working in Northern Ireland.